You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
In uncertain times, we could use someone to lean on. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oklahoma will stand by you with plan options to fit your budget. If you've recently lost your job, had a baby, or moved, you can still get the health care coverage you and your family need. Financial help may be available for those who qualify. Call 855-452-BLUE or visit hereforyouok.com to see if you're eligible to enroll. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oklahoma, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a Mutual Legal Reserve Company.
Today, this breakfast isn't just breakfast. It might be the first McDonald's breakfast you're having at McDonald's again. This lunch might be a weekly tradition you hadn't had in weeks. And this dinner might be the first one you bought for not just you in a while. Whatever this order is for you, McDonald's will be here to take it.
Get more of the chicken you love with a delicious McChicken sandwich for $1. And for an extra buck, add a refreshing Dr. Pepper. Dining rooms are starting to reopen in certain communities at participating McDonald's. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
A new year means it's time for a new home network that can keep up. With Cox Internet, you have the speed and coverage your family needs to stay connected. You'll enjoy Cox's fiber-based hybrid network with options for fast upload and download speeds. And if your household has lots of connected devices, panoramic Wi-Fi may be the perfect fit thanks to its additional control features. Plus, with advanced security on panoramic Wi-Fi, you'll know each connected device is securely protected 24/7. A whole world of connectivity is yours with Cox Internet. Learn more at cox.com.
This is Derek's O'Reilly Auto Parts story.
After the third time jump-starting my car, I finally realized my battery was dying. So I stopped by O'Reilly to have it checked. They tested it right there in the parking lot. It was bad, real bad. But they helped me find the right battery for my car and even installed it for free. Now my car starts like new. O'Reilly
Auto Parts. Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now, 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15
$3 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
The following program contains coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Robinson, you are listening to Juxtaposition, our every 2 week foray into the strange, the unusual, the unexplainable, and we are live here on KLRN Radio. My usual co-host, Mr. Ordy Packard, I do believe is back near the microphone, but I guess we'll find out in a moment. He stepped away to go get
I am, however, strange and unusual.
Well, this much we know, but that's like an entirely different show, sir. Just saying.
It's like when I am asked, what is wrong with you? Would you like that categorically or alphabetically?
I don't know which way is easier for you. But anyway, so we are live. We're going to be talking about Bigfoot this evening. We actually have a guest with us. Well, I say guest. He's actually a regular on KLR Radio, does several shows of his own, helps keep the website running. Basically jack of all trades. Good evening, Jeff. How are you?
And I agree with either jack of all trades or jackass, it all works. I'm doing well. How are you two tonight?
Jackass of all trades.
There we go.
That's what my dad used to call me, so I just kind of, you know. Anyway, so yeah, no, I'm doing all right. It's a Friday. Maybe it's because I took an extra day off from Monday, because I have a bunch of crap that I have been putting off that I have to get done this next week, so I took Monday off to make sure that I could. And I don't know, it seemed like it made today, one day felt like 12, because it was like, can we just get through this day so I can start doing the fun stuff? And then I got off work, made dinner, and the next thing I know, I'm waking up and it's like 8:30, and I'm like, I haven't seen a tweet from Sarah, and I went and looked, and I was like, oh, that was 11 hours ago. How did I not see that? But anyway, so then I jumped up and got ready to do their stuff, and then we'd been shooting some articles back and forth today a little bit, because of course we're going to be talking about Bigfoot, because why not? So we decided to have you on, because that's one of your
big feats.
Big feats.
Yeah, big feats.
Well, you know, I had to have some fun with it. But anyway, so it, without further ado, where you guys want to start?
Question. Well, okay, first of all, okay, we've kind of touched on Bigfoot in the past. I think everybody knows what they are, so we don't really need to go into describing them. But what's interesting now is when we were all younger, because we're all similar in age with it really close, there was a show In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Yep.
And that was like the only time you could really get good crypto, UFO, you know, that kind of things. And that's what really kind of turned me on to the whole legend of Bigfoot. You know, when we've done previous shows, we've talked about various cultures around the world who have their beliefs in them. And I think we're focusing now on how it's resurgent. It's coming back again. And it seems like all paranormal activity goes through cycles. So when we started doing the show, it was UFOs. And then that's kind of fallen out. But now you've got like Travel Channel and a lot of other channels doing Bigfoot Hunter shows now. And I know that with so many stations, they're just starved for content. But it also seems like even before this, there was more and more sightings than normal.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Leonard Nimoy. The Leonard Nimoy show was the one that got me into Bigfoot. And you all may laugh, and I think I've told this story somewhere before. I used to be afraid of Bigfoot. Now, growing up where I did, near Appalachian, with a lot of forest and a lot of woods, my imagination went wild with that Bigfoot could be there. My fear of Bigfoot when I was young was so vivid that when I went and watched Star Wars for the first time, I was scared of Chewbacca.
Okay, I see that, yeah.
And it's funny how, like you said, with the cycles, you know, if you would have been on the air like a year before you started, you would have been talking more ghost. And then then UFOs became big. Now Bigfoot is coming popular again. So I'm glad we're touching on this subject.
Well, so for me, honestly, I think my first exposure to Bigfoot, believe it or not, was actually the $6 million man. Does anybody remember the giant Bigfoot robot?
Yes.
Yes, there was actually a crossover episode with the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman where Bigfoot threw a bomb into a volcano because they couldn't make it.
Yeah.
It's like they were passing out on the side. And it was supposed to be, this was supposed to launch a Bigfoot TV show, and it didn't really. I think there may have been like a pilot and another episode after it, and then it just kind of...
That was actually one of my earliest memories of Bigfoot, other than, of course, being scared to death by the hunting stories my dad and my grandpa used to tell. And then, of course, the same way you guys got kind of turned back onto it again In Search Of. I think for me, it's weird, because remember the very first episode I did of Juxtaposition, where, you know, when did UFOs become mainstream and how did I miss the memo? So many of these things have become mainstream now. Like, my state is actually offering a Bigfoot hunting license. And, of course, it's billed as a joke. But you have to understand that with every legend and every joke, there's always a bit of truth in there somewhere. So you just kind of wonder what gave them the idea to do that. But anyway.
Well, and you know, and when you like with, you know, I find that interesting that your state does that, because now that so much of it has been ceded to Indian territory, you think it would be protected instead of like the bounty on it.
Right. Dude, that bounty's $1 million. I want to go catch that mofo.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that Oklahoma is doing the license where right across the state border for me, it's actually one of the towns. Like, you know, you have state animals. They have a city animal, and it's Bigfoot. That is their town animal. It was voted on by their council, and Bigfoot is their town animal.
And, you know, the other thing that's interesting about the Bigfoot legend, too, is that, like you were talking about, you know, with the town animal, is that where they get sighted, it seems to ebb and flow, too. It's like, you know, back when the Pattinson film was released, it was all about California, Pacific Northwest, but specifically Northern California, Oregon. That's where all the hunters went. And now, according to a study done by, not really a study, but a poll, something done by the Travel Channel, the areas most likely to see, you know, if you're doing Bigfoot tourism, and the 9 states most likely to find them are Washington State, for one, which has got, I mean, it's always been part of their legend, too. A lot of the totems for the area do have a Bigfoot-like character on them. But in 2019, remember, we were all locked down with COVID, too, so there weren't a lot of people going out hiking. There were over 2,000 sightings and counting in Washington State. Now, other areas are the Blue Mountains, Ape Canyon is one of the, best places to find them in Washington State. Next is California, and then you go through Pennsylvania, Michigan, New York, Ohio. What's interesting about this one is new to, the Bigfoot hunting list, and going with what you were mentioning about how they have a bounty in Oklahoma, is northern and eastern Texas. And I find that completely fascinating because Texas isn't really, I mean, when you think Bigfoot, you think either Pacific Northwest, the Northeast, Maine has really become a hotspot for it too.
Yeah.
Or you're up in the, along the Canadian border, in Michigan, Montana, and North Dakota. Yeah, those have always been historically, along the north half of the country, but for now being Texas being so popular, I mean, Texas's thing not too long ago was chupacabras everywhere, and now Bigfoot's moved into the area.
Maybe, yeah, that is interesting.
Maybe
yeah.
Bigfoot's eating the goat suckers.
I was going to make a joke, but it has a little bit of politics in it, so I'll refrain for that for the moment.
Now you have to ask yourself, is Bigfoot the natural predator of the chupacabras?
Could explain why they're moving into different
territory. On the next episode of Juxtaposition.
It feels like a 10-page thesis. It's weird how the sightings have increased. I know, I mean, we pretty much, the three of us, have the U.S. covered. We got East, Central, and West Coast. And having been in the Adirondacks in New York and northern Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, there are stretches that I guarantee you humans probably haven't stepped foot on for 100-plus years. There are just some areas that you just really cannot get to easily, and if you have gone there once, you probably don't remember how you got there. So I'm not shocked just by the sheer numbers of the sighting, and it's everyone has the cameras with them now too. You would hope eventually someone will get some good footage.
Yeah, and there is actually good footage coming out. I mean, one of the downsides of doing radio is that we can't actually show some of the new the new Pattison videos. But it's there's a lot of compelling evidence out there. And like you said, with the technology now, you've got military, civilians have military grade night vision.
Yeah.
Now, in a lot of cases, even better than the military, because one of the things with military grade, you got to realize that was put together by the lowest bidder. we have the technology, but, and I think it was you that dropped the article, Jeff, is that, one of the reasons why they may not be getting caught on film is because they can sense the technology and who's using it, and they know how to avoid it even better.
When I found that article today, it rang true on so many levels. And I'm trying to pull up which article, which one it was. Okay, yeah, it was an article about why aren't all the people who are looking for Bigfoot finding it, and it's a world famous cryptozoologist was talking about it, and he thinks a lot of it. I hope it's a he. Lauren might be. I don't know.
It's a he. Okay. I checked, and yeah,
is that a majority of Bigfoot hunters are male, and males put out pheromones. So they suggest a group of women with no guns, maybe not even cameras, to go camping for a week or a month. And he cited Jane Goodall, and practically every other primatologist that's had success has been female. And it that just rang so true to me. Like, oh my God, that's simply brilliant. And why haven't anyone done this?
Yeah, well, you know, no, I mean, it's a fantastic point. And there was, you know, a similar article, too, talking about how, you know, most of the cryptids are believed to be, they're going to be found in, you know, Sumatra and, in, you know, the that region. You know, a lot of what have been legends in there are going to be found to be true. And, you know, kind of along the same lines as that, like, you know, to your point, to his point, yeah, the most successful primatologists in the world have been female. And whether it's because they're not generally, you know, looking to hunt, or, as you said, you know, the pheromonal attraction of it. Because, yeah, I mean, when you get right down to it, Bigfoot is considered to be part humanoid. So there's that whole, you know.
And I know we make fun of Bigfoot erotica, but a sure. group of women putting out female pheromones may actually attract something that is might have some human DNA or human sensibilities of the smell being similar. It makes sense.
I was about to say. Actually, it makes perfect sense, and I'm with Jeff. I'm surprised nobody's thought of it before, because there's two things. So first of all, back to them possibly being able to sense the technology. We know that the phones that we have that we carry around everywhere that are basically computers in our pockets put off low-level EM fields. So there's a good chance they may actually be sensing that somehow. Also, if most of the hunters, which they are, happen to be male, then the hormones that we put out are going to be fairly similar to the ones that they put out. So sending women into the area could be a really good way of flushing them out. It could also lead to some other things, maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah. You know, is it one of those things where you have two groups? You have the female camp A and the male camp B, you know, a little further away, but within running distance. I love this. I love that concept. It just makes sense on so many different levels. And we've mentioned the cycles, and I actually want to credit ghost hunting for the number of increases of Bigfoot sightings and detections and things. I think the technology that hit everyone with ghost hunting has actually started being implemented when they go, you know, we can find heat signatures in the infrared and nighttime vision that the ghost hunters are using. And now you incorporate the hunting equipment and combine the two. I'm not surprised that maybe that is why we're starting to get more hits, more indicators, and maybe some footage coming soon.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely to your point, and one of the things that really surprised me once Ghost Hunter started coming out, and after the point, it just became, okay, you're getting a little too gimmicky with it, but you know, their use of FLIR, their use of third-gen night vision, their use of magnetic field detectors, all the tools that they would bring, you know, in their arsenal. And that's what's really amazing is it's so commonplace, and with pie and Arduino, you can make most of it at home. You don't even have to go out and buy the expensive kits anymore.
Yep.
Without turning this into a cyber chill show. But one of the things, you know, going back to when we were talking about In Search Of, it just hit me when you were talking about that, Jeff, is that when I was at computer camp, we would still go on field trips like a normal camp. And I remember the bus driver was telling stories to those of us who were in the front, and it was night, and we were riding back, and he was obviously just trying to, you know, do like campfire tales and everything, but he always, you know, he had made the mention, and this always kind of stuck with me that, and again, you have to go back, this is before the internet, this is the early 80s, this is when I think In Search Of was maybe in its second season, but the way you would get this kind of information was reading Fate magazine or, you know, some publications by a local MUFON group or something like that. And he had made the point, and this has stuck with me my whole life, is that if you ever think you see a Bigfoot, look in the sky for a UFO, or vice versa. If you see a UFO, listen for rustling through the forest. And he made a very compelling case of tying the two together.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking that would be a good juxtaposition too, but that didn't occur to me when we were doing this one, because it would be anyway.
You know me well enough. You're not going to laugh at this. 1999, 2000. I actually spent a year and a half on pinpointing maps of UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings, and the number of actual pair ups were statistically large,
very high correlation.
Yes, and it is amazing just how now. I know. I think you and Mickey have mentioned something about maybe Bigfoot being ethereal, or plane shifters as well, and that would make sense.
I know Rick and I have talked about that too, but yeah. No, definitely.
But yeah,
everybody has their ice cubes or Ringling.
The idea of the two being combined is not as far-fetched as I think a lot of people would initially think. A lot of people would hear the two and go, yeah. But then when you start showing maps and data and things of that nature, all of a sudden it's one of those things where, wait a minute, this is too coincidental to be an accident.
Yeah, and the overlap too, because we've talked about this on other cryptid shows and things like that, is when something happens in an area, you get kind of like a little fever about it. A county will suddenly get like UFO fever where everybody starts reporting UFOs, or it was more often then, because now it's like on the internet, it doesn't seem as often. But you remember back in the day, like someone would claim to see, it was kind of like the Salem witch trial thing, where a couple girls think they're seeing witches, and then all of a sudden there's witches everywhere in the county, and a whole bunch of people are getting burned to the stake. And Rick and I talked about that, I believe, when we did the primer for Bigfoot. We were talking about that too, and how when it flares up in a county, all of a sudden it's everywhere. But the thing with the correlation with UFOs, it's not like we were talking about where everything goes through cycles. It's happening simultaneously when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the county all of a sudden got Bigfoot fever and then all of a sudden got UFO fever. It's kind of like, no, that was a Bigfoot. No, that was an alien. No, that was a Bigfoot. You got chocolate in my peanut butter. You got peanut butter in my chocolate kind of thing.
The part that stood out to me the most when I did that research all those years ago, and I have to admit, that was the infancy of the internet. It was painful to do. It wasn't just a U.S. North America phenomenon. When I did my episode of In the Crease about Bigfoot and Yeti and all that, there the correlation of Yeti and UFO applies there as well, in Asia Minor and all of that. Europe sightings, you can just, I will admit, North America has more coincidental sightings, but they were still statistically above what you would think it would be for Yeti and UFOs as well. So the correlation is there. That are they connected, or is it just because people are looking? I personally think that it's probably a connection.
Yeah, I was gonna say there. In my experience, there literally is no such thing as coincidence. There's a connection.
Yeah, especially with the. I mean, I wish I don't have the maps or anything anymore, or even my notes. But the number was above 20% in North America, and that is what you wouldn't expect in the number of incidents of UFOs and Bigfoot sightings that. It would be above 20%. I wish I could remember the exact number. I know it wasn't quite 30, but it was somewhere in the 20s. Mathematically, that's not normal.
I remember reading an article somewhere that said, if I remember right, I think it boasted 25 to 26% correlation. So your numbers are pretty spot on, but that's just pulling something out of the back machine that I
That's way beyond a statistical collaboration. So, but, you know, it's funny. When you mentioned it, you got me thinking that when you're talking about Europe and you're talking about, you know, when these sightings, whether it's UFOs or Bigfoot or anything, when it happens globally, in America, it's always an individual or a couple, you know, maybe a family, a homestead or something like that. But when you look at it, especially Eastern Europe, you look at it in most of Asia when it happens to, it's an entire village that it's happening to simultaneously. It's not like the, you know, the dude just traipsing out in the woods. It's not like saying, you know, they don't go out into the woods, because they do. But they also have that, you know, that still whole communal mentality that we don't really have in the United States. I mean, you know, we do have our communities, but, you know, and it always has been rugged individualism. So, yeah, it's always like, you know, whether it's a UFO sighting, you know, the couple out on the road, or, you know, Bigfoot sighting, someone at their, you know, at their homestead or whatever like that. But, you know, in Europe, like I said, especially Eastern Europe, it happens to the whole village simultaneously. And that, again, takes out the whole, like, you know, UFO fever striking the village. It's the same event that they all saw, or they all experienced. Yeah. That's what I find fascinating, too, in that, you know, it's when there's a, whatever their regional version of a Bigfoot is, it goes walking into the village. Or there's a, you know, or it's at the outskirts, somebody at the outskirts, you know, sends one of the kids running in town, the whole village comes out and sees the end of the event.
Yes. And a lot of skeptics will use either the mass psychosis explanation, or the locals, yokels, haven't seen technology. Well, the UFO Bigfoot connection cancels kind of all of that, because one, yes, could be, you know, an SR-71 flying low altitude, but the other one is a hairy ape-like man.
Right.
You couldn't really get further off the spectrum of technology than these two.
Yeah, no, they're total opposite ends of it.
Why are you talking? Yes. Why are you talking trash about Uncle Vito? Just saying.
See, what's funny is, you know,
but we lost you as soon as. Well, actually, I think it's Spreaker being dumb, because now we're back there again too. All right. Anyway, I lost you as soon as you said Rick, when you said, and then you came back, and I heard the very end, so I missed something in the middle.
Okay. So it's okay. So what? If I'm indeed back,
you're good.
Since we started doing the Mandela Effect, I don't believe in mass psychosis anymore.
No, I don't either. To be honest.
Because it's just too large. It's too large of a group. You know, it's kind of the same thing with you. It's just too large of a group, too large of a sample to be just a random, you know, or, you know, like something in the water. You know?
No, I mean, and that was actually one of the turning points for me, because when we really started digging into the Mandela Effect and how many people actually have been impacted by that one way or the other, you start looking at all these other things, and it's like, you know, I'd forgotten about that article that I read that tied the correlations between UFOs and Bigfoot together until Jeff mentioned it, and that's when that number popped in my head. I was like, oh shit, I remember reading something about that years ago, if I remember right. But it's one of those things about having a really good memory. The problem is, as you get older, even if you have a really good memory, things still occasionally get misfiled. So, yeah. I can pretty much remember phone numbers from, like, 1972. I can remember books word for word, but don't ask me where I park my car or where my keys are. It's just weird. Anyway, it drives my kids crazy.
I can remember my high school locker combination, but I couldn't tell you anybody's phone number anymore.
Yeah, it drives my kids crazy. Because
past 1989. Yeah, I can tell you anybody I knew phone number prior to 1989, but now,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just as bad with it now, because I'm like, everything's stored. And I've noticed now that I have a newer car, I like, you know, GPS everything. So my son was teasing me the other day, because I've only been to his new house like 4 times. And he's like, you've been here 4 times. How do you not know where I am? Because I'm used to the map telling me where to go. Shut up.
You know what? I'm sidebarring this real quick, and Jeff, I don't know what kind of GPS you use in your work truck, but Michael backed me up on this too. If you get your hands on Trucker GPS, is so much better than regular GPS.
Yes, yes,
it is much more accurate. So,
yeah,
ladies, cops,
yeah, all of it. But no, but I mean, just directions in and of itself. You know, sometimes it'll take you on a weird route, but it's the destination is always easier to approach than like the one that's in my car.
Well, and I'm actually I want to bring GPS and Bigfoot sightings together. With GPS being so available now, where you when you drove, you used to have to pay more attention to the signs. Now you're listening to the GPS and you're just driving on the road. How much more sightings are occurring because you're not necessarily looking to the right for where the exit sign is? You're looking at the head, so you're getting peripheral of both sides of the road.
You're actually taking more in, which is, I mean, you'd think that a GPS map would make you less safe. It's actually making you more safe because you're able to process more without, like you say, you know, turning down the radio to find an address. That never made sense to me, but everybody does it.
Everybody does it, yes.
So,
you know, and with the GPS, I want to go into the one story I posted about a recent sighting in Malone, Washington. It was from a 911 dispatcher who happens to be, she's like, what, 27?
Yeah.
And it was 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon. She was driving home. And she spotted something that she said she lasted about 3 seconds. She was traveling about 55. And she said it was probably 6 feet with a slim and muscular build. And most likely this was probably not. But how likely would she have seen it if she wasn't using GPS? And with the GPS, some certain ones you can like mark it to where you're at so you can get rough coordinates now. Mm-hmm. It is. It's just, I look at this story, 100% do not believe it's Sasquatch or Bigfoot or any of that. But just the fact that she saw something driving now, I don't think she would have seen that 10, 15 years ago.
No, you're right. And to your point, whether it was or not, it also, depending upon the GPS you're using, of course, you can hit that location. So you can go back and investigate later. You can look for the footprints. You can look for, you know, whatever. So you can parse that out yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the story, they post several images, and they even have one of where they think she saw it. And I don't know if this will let me save it. Sorry, I'm on my Linux box, so I'm trying to figure this out. Let me see if I can post that in chat.
You want to go to commercial? You got it. Okay.
There we go.
Yeah, and that's the other thing with Google Earth too. I mean, when you're getting down to Street View, you know, as evil as Google is, this is from a time that they weren't evil,
yeah.
And this is actually useful for the world.
I'm sorry, I got to go there. How hilarious will it be that if Google Earth car picked up a Bigfoot and it blurs his face because it thought it was a human?
Yes.
Sorry.
No, I'm on the next Cyber Chill.
Jeff, is that your phone?
But yeah.
With the picture? Because if that's your phone, you can charge your battery. Let's see.
No, thankfully not.
Just checking. It's like, that battery's kind of low, bro.
It is pathetically low, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, okay, A, what is someone doing up there? So I can understand her instantly thinking it's not human. That's a pretty, not you. If it was a person, you would almost expect them more down on alongside the road, not up, you know, what, 20 feet maybe? So,
yeah, I was going to say, that's quite a bit of height, so yeah, I could kind of see her wondering about that. I mean, you know, part mountain goat maybe, but not human.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious as to new evidence we're going to see within the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. And I know you, both of you are, I am a major UFO freak. What information from satellites will we pick up? Has there been information? You know, does the FBI have files on Bigfoot sightings and pictures?
You know what I think it would really take off? What'll really make it take off, and in the U.S. is if we adopt Russia and Ukraine's craze for dash cam cameras.
Yes.
You knew exactly where I was going with that, because that's huge there because of all the insurance fraud, but everybody has dash cams. And again, Mike, I'm pretty sure you had them in your vehicles too. I have them in my work trucks where I can just, you know, hit a button and then it'll record 14 seconds of whatever's going on around me. And from wherever I have a camera going. So that is, I think that would be huge for all of this. Okay. If y'all are listening out there, you know, UFO hunters, ghost hunters, Bigfoot hunters, things like that, get yourself some dash cams and just be ready. Because that's, again, you know, when you hear all these sightings, it's for people seeing Bigfoot running off the side of the road. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you had a dash cam, you know, maybe one front, one rear, and where you could just hit that button and start recording, again, like you said with GPS, totally hands free. And
I want to kind of go along those lines with where I work. I travel a fair bit of New England, and during the winter, with it getting dark early, occasionally, you know, you can go 40, 50 miles without seeing a rest stop, rest area, or even a store that has an open bathroom. So a lot of times you have to pull on these little off ramps to go relieve yourself. And whenever I have to go to, say, like Saranac Lake, Lake Placid, New York, I have to travel along the Adirondacks for about an hour, hour and a half. And coming home, there are times where you pull over in the dead of, you know, it's 4:30 in the afternoon and it's dark, pitch dark. And you're next to miles and miles of forested area. And you get out of the work vehicle, you go relieve your business, and you're listening. It is surprisingly quiet. So when you hear a branch break or something from a tree fall or howls that don't sound like animals you're used to, you get chills up and down your spine, and you hop back in your work vehicle because you're not allowed to carry weapons and things of that nature in your work vehicle, and you flee.
You don't even do the follow-up jiggle.
No.
Just
no.
A second shake and go.
So, just knowing what I have experienced just in brief moments, and knowing what I have experienced in the Appalachians, down in the Maryland, West Virginia area, some sounds just are not normal sounds. And my question, I can't say I've ever had a Bigfoot encounter. I've had two or three instances where, if I was a wagering man, I would put money down that it was probably something very close to Bigfoot. Have either of you had any personal experience stories or talk with individuals who have?
I actually have not had. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I have friends when I was a kid that, you know, we used to do. I think pretty much everybody in our age group has done it, where you sit around with your friends and they start telling fish stories. So yeah, I have friends that swore up and down that they had seen Bigfoot, but I've never seen any documented proof as far as it happening as I've gotten older. You know, short of the one time when I think I was maybe 12 or 13 and my granddad tried to scare the crap out of me, and it turns out it was just my uncle in a suit. Bastards. Bastards. But anyway. So yeah, no, that's the closest I've ever come to an actual Bigfoot scenario, and I haven't ever talked to anybody personally that has said they've seen them that has any verifiable, like, you know, any type of evidence or anything. I mean, there's been a couple that have said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw one, but, I mean, that was, you know, before cell phones, so not everybody had a camera on them all the time, and yada yada. But, yeah, so, what about you, or anybody?
Well, two things. One is kind of funny. A few weeks ago, I was up in Carson City doing some shopping at Costco and all that, and I came back. It was kind of late at night, and like Jeff was talking about, pulled off the side of the road to do a thing. And
checking the tire.
It's, Yeah, just checking the tires. And it's not that I saw or felt, it was like the silence that you were talking about, and an overwhelming sense of dread came over me, like, you know, the get the fuck out now. You human, this is not where a human being is supposed to be at this point. So, you know, this is like, this is how people, you know, this is why Unsolved Mysteries is a thing. And so that was a definite, you know, don't go with a follow-up jiggle, hop in the car, and then, you know, get a move on. But back late 80s, early 90s, I was working at a video store, and one of my coworkers, he owned a camera shop. And he just also worked at the video store, you know, just to, you know, help supplement his income from the camera shop. And this was back when people processed film. And, you know, before digital and everything else, when you would actually have to take your roll of film out of your camera, go someplace, and have them turned into paper that you could view on. And he told a story that someone came in, dropped off their film, and he processed it, and then he noticed an abnormal, something not indigenous to the area, you know, something that you couldn't look at and go, okay, that's a mule deer, that's a brown bear, that's a this, that's a, you know, it's some animal that, and when the guy came back to pick up his film, he asked him about it, and, you know, the guy said, well, we were up at, you know, a lake in the area, and the daughters came running up and asked for the camera, and I didn't think anything, I gave them the camera, and they ran off, and then they came back about an hour later. And that's where those pictures were from. And it creeped him out. He wouldn't let – the guy wouldn't let my friend, my coworker, keep copies of those prints. And that's why I was like, okay, part fish story because, you know, this, again, you know, kind of, you know, hey, I own a camera shop. You should see the things that I, you know, get in there sometime. But on the other hand, it wasn't like he was bragging about it. He was, like, disturbed about the conversation. And the guy wouldn't let him keep copies of those things that, you know, were on the film. And so it's kind of like that, I believe it because he wasn't hyping it up, you know, it was just kind of, you know.
And his girls took the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. Bringing a circle back to the first part of our show tonight.
I see what you're
I'm picking up what you're putting down there. All right, but yeah, no, I think it's interesting because you know the camera shop dude sold those damn pictures to the Inquirer for like a mint.
Well, he didn't though, and that's just I worked with him for another 3 years.
I would have,
you know, Well, but that's the thing is that you know again during this time, if you were a ethical film processor, you would ask for permission to make copies. So you know there's the photomat dorks, and then there's the real camera house people. So, yeah. And he was one of the latter because he sold these super high end cameras too, and the you know he was a full camera you know nerd. He could tell you, you know, you just show him a picture, he could tell you the exact year, make, and model of that camera kind of thing.
I have a follow up question for you guys. My last Lost Wonder, I did about a 5-minute rant on a certain topic and talked about how aliens, if they came here, I don't think it would unite us as much as people think it would. What do you think the reaction of anyone would be in general if, say, we found a dead carcass of a Bigfoot?
I don't think that it would really – okay, that's, you know, the opposite of the alien thing. I mean, unless there was something really unique about it other than it existing. But it's that kind of the whole elephant graveyard thing, you know, where it's like it was believed that there was some great elephant graveyard where they all went to die because nobody ever saw a carcass of an elephant. Yeah. And it turns out that's just due to predation.
Yeah.
But we didn't know much about predation at the time either. So – it were that to be found, I think it would take a lot of the mystique out of the Bigfoot thing. You know, because the one thing that holds Bigfoot, aside from eons of communal knowledge of it, you know, it being ancestral knowledge.
Yeah, I can't undersell, out of all the cryptids that have been populated throughout human history. Bigfoot is one of the oldest.
And it's everywhere. And yes. Rick and I talked about that on the show. It is everywhere. It's like Elvis. It shows up in a Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah. Or you know, off yeah. of a...
Every culture has it, though.
Walks into the Piggly Wiggly. Hey, Frank, give me some of that Jack's Links, bro. Just walks back out.
Right. What is that? The magically delicious beast?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... I've often thought of what would happen if we actually found proof of Bigfoot. And I don't think the ramifications would be huge. But I think it would spark an interest in every other cryptid that is out there. You would see a new dedication to Loch Ness, to Champy, to the Jersey Devil. I think you would see an increase in that, and unfortunately you would hear a lot more fakes and things of that nature. But yeah, I would be curious as to what the general populace would how their mind would change if something like Bigfoot was proven true.
See, my thing is, I don't think it would be the general populace that would have trouble with it. It's kind of like the, with everything else with trust the science now, yeah. I think that no matter how real it was, science, air quote, would be forced to discredit it. They would be forced to piltdown it mm-hmm. because they've spent so long saying it's not real. You know, it's, I mean, aside from, you know, like when you find one live, that's totally different. You know, it's,
So
mountain gorillas were a myth until Jane Goodall went and started hanging out with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, you would need that. You're not going to get it with if you just have a corpse. They're going to piltdown it because science needs it to not exist.
Well, so here's my thing, and I think it ties back to what he was bringing up with the aliens too. So they did studies years ago about what they thought would happen if the general population was made aware of the fact that we may not be alone in the universe, and their studies at the time were very, you know, astounding because they were like, they were predicting mass suicides and everything else. I don't think if that were the case, and I don't really think it is today, but if that were the case, I don't think finding out about a cryptid like Bigfoot would cause the same thing, but in two places. First, the church would have a fit because that would basically prove the missing link theory that everybody says doesn't exist, because it's kind of what that is. Two, the new secular human religion of science would, as Ordy said, do everything they could to destroy it because they've spent years claiming that it wasn't real. Also, the problem in this day and age with even if you find one live, unless you're actually there, deepfakes have become such a thing, they're still going to try to discredit it.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Yeah, and one of my favorite deepfakes, and a lot of people don't know that it's a deepfake, is the orangutan with an AK-47.
Mm-hmm. See,
and that is so well done.
Every time I see that, I think of Clyde from Any Which Way But
Loose. Right? Yeah. So, you know, yeah. But and even like 15, 20 years ago, science would have embraced it.
Yeah.
It's like you said, the new secular religion of science. Hail science! It can't allow any dissension anymore. You know, it's like, I mean, a good example of this, and I use this frequently during the climate change debate, is that the Big Bang Theory is falling out of favor in everywhere except for people who need it to be real.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't, mathematically, it doesn't work as well anymore, especially not what we know about quantum mechanics. So the people who cling to Big Bang, like grim death, are the people who need it to dispute Christianity or to dispute religion.
Well, that, you know, and it's I talked about that last Sunday. There's a new anti-universe theory, and it's getting poo-pooed, not because it's mathematically wrong, but because it goes against the Big Bang. And I think the Bigfoot idea, or any, I mean, seriously, if we took a picture of Loch Ness, you know, giving birth, people would claim it's fake.
That's not real.
Yeah,
but yeah, no. Back to the Big Bang for just a second, because I've always thought this was interesting, because, you know, as somebody that, you know, is a pastor, I know I don't always talk like one, but I am. but anyway, so I've always had this thing, because, you know, God created the heaven and the earth in 7 days. We really don't know how long a day is in heaven. There's a couple things in the Bible that try to say how long they think it is, but we really don't know. So the fact that, you know, when the Big Bang was the thing and all the scientists were like, see, this proves it, because, yeah, the opening line of the Bible is God said, let there be light, and there was. What the do you think a Big Bang would have looked like? Hello? Yep. Duh.
And he didn't say which Big Bang.
Right. The best bang since the big one. and I hate to say that about science, because I went to college for science, and it really has become a religion now. And it doesn't do itself any favors, and especially in the cryptid realm of science, because before 1970, plate tectonics was considered to be a myth.
Mm-hmm.
Plate tectonics, something that is so rudimentary. I mean, you look at the globe and you go, yeah, all those pieces fit together.
How many times have we been told oil would run out?
Oh yeah, don't even get me started on that, because
You know, how many? I have a story coming up next week where they have an image from space of something 25 billion light years away. How old's the universe?
Well, now it's not 16 billion anymore, that's for sure. Yes. Unless you believe the universe is curved, then it's just looking at something closer from the wrong direction.
That's part of the theory too. But yes. But it's allegedly 25 billion light years away. It's named after something Tolkien wrote, which I'm going to love talking about. So everything we know about science today will be wrong tomorrow. And that's
what science is.
And that's the beauty of science. And far too many, and I know you're a pastor, Rick, so please forgive me for what I'm about to say. When something goes, I'm going to use this term, fact-based to religion-based, and I don't mean to say religion's not fact, but when it's like science-based to religion-based, you lose something. And you lose that ability to think maybe something is different.
See, I know where you're going with it, but I completely disagree, because
I'm not expressing it correctly, because two Long Islands in and it's midnight.
Well, that's kind of why I'm trying to help you, because I can kind of feel where you're trying to go with it. But as a man of faith, and this is not so. Just for clarification, to me, there's a difference between religion and faith. Religion is a mm-hmm. practice created by a man. Faith is a belief in something bigger than you are. There's a big difference there. So, but what I firmly believe is, at some point, when all of these pieces fit together, the truth is going to be somewhere in the middle, and we're still going to find out that we were created by something or someone else that is bigger than we are, and we're just going to have to face it. Whether it's going to be a combination of a lot of the different things that we believe in, because honestly, most of the world's religions all at one point believed in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. And if I ever do episode 42 of In the Crease, you'll understand completely.
Well, you know, and... Rick, I mean, that's something, you're breaking that down. That's something that we actually discussed at length when we were doing the, back in October, when we were doing the witchcraft ones, when we were talking and everything around mm-hmm. that, when we were talking about how all religions on the earth are pretty much the same, except for those that are branched off of Zoroastrianism.
Yes.
And which actually defined the battle of good versus evil. Everything, all the other religions of the world, they didn't put them. It wasn't a one side or the other had to win. It was one side or the other. They needed each other. Yes. So that's kind of like when you change the natural order, even of a religion, when you change this natural order, that's when you get cult-like mentality, and that's where we're at with science now. When you get
that's perfect. call.
When you're looking at, you know, pure sciences, I mean the pure hard sciences, math and physics, astronomy, things that you rely on empirical evidence, they're not as prone to it. It's when you get further away, when you start to get into climate sciences or get into biology, then that's when things can, because biology isn't a real, I mean, it's close to science, but it's still, you know, there's quite a bit of witchcraft involved in it still. So that's when you start getting what we have our national, international debates on now about biology, and the systems are too random to be, you know, it's like when you look at physics, when you look at chemistry, when you look at astronomy, you are observing something. You are observing a reaction. Everything else is guesswork.
I mean,
and your use of call is probably the best word I could have come up with. You have opposing cults who will not acknowledge that the other one could possibly be right. We have, you know, we have various cults of science, of religion, of, you know, cryptids, of alien believers. They're all different cults, and certain cults despise the other cult without realizing they don't necessarily counteract each other, but they're so stuck in their own cult they can't allow outside information to seep in. And
well,
I think
a perfect example is that those people who believe in the Nordics and the Greys absolutely do not believe the reptilians are real.
Right.
And vice versa. The reptilians are like, no, there's no such thing as Greys or the Nordics. They're all reptilians because that's the base form of life on Earth. So obviously that's, you know, what's true on Earth is true everywhere.
And scientifically, all of the above and more are most likely.
Right.
So I strenuously object to you saying that biology is not a science of observation, because I observe a lot, like, you know, just you know, it's not.
Not Pornhub does not count.
Hey, where are the white women at?
There you go. Anyway, sorry.
But really, it's we've. I know what he said, she said earlier. They were talking about books,
mm-hmm.
And one of my books that I listed in my top five in chat was The Mathematical Principle by Isaac Newton. When you look at facts and you look at data, if you look at it as being possibly correct, a lot more opens up in the world. Is Bigfoot possible mathematically? Yes. Are aliens possible mathematically? Almost 100% yes.
Right.
Well, hang on. I don't mean to stop you there, but you've brought up an interesting point, because for anybody who doesn't think that aliens are mathematically possible at this point, remember that 20 years ago we thought our planet was the only one in our solar system that even had the potential for water. Now they're finding it everywhere.
Yeah. Now there's three moons around one planet, two moons around another, and there's a possibility of Pluto, which is still a planet.
Right. Fuck off, Neil.
Has ice volcanoes. So, yes. But, yeah, when you look at the science, when you look at mathematics at its purest form, there are certain things you can actually say no. As far as we understand, there is zero chance of this happening. All of this stuff, like Bigfoot, Yeti, Sasquatch, whatever, mathematically, scientifically, if you look at it correctly, there is a percentage chance that it is real. And then until that number reaches zero, you have to allow for a possibility that it exists. And too many people don't do that.
Okay, yeah, you know, Crow, okay, biology is a science, medicine, not so much. sorry, I conflated those two a little bit. You know, but to your point, and this is why anybody who categorically says, okay, without touching into politics, it's by trying not to. Those who are most likely to deny the existence of X, whether it is UFOs, cryptids, Bigfoot, whatever, are in the media. And as we see, because they like to hoo 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 the Hicks saw Bigfoot again, and as we have seen in politics and in a lot of other ways, is that they, for reporting on the world as their job, they don't seem to understand exactly how large it is. I mean, it's like you're talking about you in your area. It being on the West Coast, and until one, I saw Blair Witch Project, and two, I actually went and saw it myself driving through Algonquin. We out here don't think of the Eastern Seaboard as having anything resembling a forest. You know, the joke is, you know, New Jersey's the Garden State if you're growing smokestacks. We don't process that. It's like, you know, a lot of people can't think of California as having more 14,000-foot peaks than Colorado.
Right.
You know, it's until you go there, you mentally can't process it. And those people who deny it just have a very small view of the world. They don't understand how big it is. And once you get a few miles outside of your comfortable city, you are fucking Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah. And I'll use the example of Vermont. Now, everyone thinks Vermont is small, and it kind of is. But traveling is not small. It is hard to comprehend if you don't live in Vermont to understand there is not a single east-west highway in the state of Vermont. Every highway is north and south. So if you want to go from the east side of Vermont to the west side, you basically have to take back roads. And that should tell you just how open an area as small as Vermont is on the map for hiding things.
I mean, you could put three Vermonts in my county.
Exactly. But and I bet you your county has an east-west highway. But
no.
Oh, actually, okay. But
wait. No.
Might be close. Roads.
Okay. Yeah.
but when you think about it, Vermont has a creature, an animal, that they think is extinct. But every 2 to 3 years, on a hunting cam, it shows up. How can that be? They categorically say the catamount is extinct, but every 2 or 3 years, there's a picture of one. And all the news poo-poos it. Oh, no, that's not a catamount. That's a mountain lion. That's this or that. No, it's a catamount. Same thing with the, the thylacine down in South America? It's shown up a couple times on hunting cams. So to bring it back to the big, we don't know what we don't know.
Right. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the coelacanth was rediscovered.
Yeah.
That was a fish thought to be extinct. Now, they're quite actually prolific.
You know, and it's was it Ron? No, it was Rooster. Don't we still have more research and info done on outer space than we do on the ocean floor? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's because it's actually easier to get to outer space than it is to get to the ocean floor.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, a lot of people don't, again, when you live in your tiny little bubble, you don't realize space is easier than, you know, lack of pressure. It's easier to make something that, you know, you provide your own pressure, then you're fighting the pressure of multiple, you know, tons per square inch.
Yeah.
Because of all the weight of the ocean on it. I mean, you can get there, but it's expensive and it's not easy.
You know, and I dare people to explain to me some of the sea life that exists on Earth. It does not match what should happen on Earth. So you want to tell me, you know, squid or an octopus that can regrow things or does certain things no other creature does, that a Bigfoot can't be real just because we haven't found it? I'm not buying it.
How about you, Rick?
I wouldn't buy it for a dollar. Just saying. Anyway, no, honestly, I agree. I think they're, to quote Hamlet, there are more things under heaven and earth than, yeah, anyway. Just saying. Yeah, there's just, I'm a firm believer. I really am. I pretty much always have been. But then again, I mean, we got into some of the weird things that have happened in my life when we were doing the whole demons and possession story, like me almost drowning in a pool when I was off by myself and being held underwater by something. There was one time I remember, it was honestly around the same time, I remember I'd asked my parents for permission to stay out later than normal, so I was walking home in the dark. I remember getting to the front porch, and it suddenly felt like something was trying to pull me back off of the porch, and it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up, and I jumped around, and there was nothing there.
You know, Rick, I understand that the first comment that you said about the drowning, 100%. When I was baptized, I felt like I was drowning, like I wasn't meant to do it, at least not with that church. And so I understand where you're coming from in some regards, that sometimes you're not in places you should have been.
Yeah, no, I mean, with me, it was literally, I was at the YMCA getting swim lessons, and we were working in the deep end, and we had our little foam paddle boards they used to give you back in the day. Well, I got tired and asked the instructor if I could go back to the shallow end so I could touch. And the next thing I know, I'm like standing in water that I can touch in, and suddenly I'm being pulled backwards, and there's nobody around me. And the next thing I know, I'm looking up upside down in the water with my feet sticking out, and I'm just looking up, and the next thing I know, I'm waking up, and there's some firefighter giving me mouth to mouth. I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old. It's the freakiest thing I have ever been through. It scared the shit out of my mom. But anyway, so yeah, that's why I firmly believe that there are definitely things out there that are not easily explained, because I've lived through a couple of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if people were to stop and truly evaluate their existence at this point, that they probably had experiences similar. So to deny things that just because you haven't experienced it that isn't real doesn't mean it's not real. And just because you haven't experienced a UFO, Bigfoot, Loch Ness, that doesn't mean they're not real. It just means you haven't seen it. And too many people conflate, if they haven't seen it in front of their face, it's not real.
All right, so I'm going to go around the table, because we're long, guys, and I'm starting to float over here. Ordy, yes, no, Bigfoot.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously. And then, you know, getting to, you know, I wanted to wrap up, you know, with one of Jeff's points, too, is that where I'm at, I'm a desert rat. I spend a lot of time out in the desert. And, you know, you think that the desert is barren and lifeless, but there's one thing that, you know, I've talked to Mickey about this because he's a desert rat, too, and, you know, you see everything in the sky. You see, because there isn't a lot of trees and everything to break up the landscape, you see shapes moving off in the distance that aren't behaving like coyotes. And you understand the Native American Southwest, where they get a lot of their myths and legends from. And you can bring that in, because I'm in the high desert, I'm also in the mountains, so you get that feel as well. And like I talked about, you know, coming back from Carson City a couple weeks ago, that existential dread. You know, most of the time when you're out in the desert and you're just kind of hanging out, you're fine, and everything's fine. But every now and then you get that at this moment, you people should not be here. We are going to be, us others are going to be doing something, and you need to go now. So, it can't not be real. You know, and being out in the desert, I understand, you know, how skinwalkers and everything else are, yeah, I can totally buy into those. It doesn't take, I've seen things. So, yes, Bigfoot is obviously real.
And you, Jeff?
When I did my episode of In the Crease, I said definite yes in the past, plausible now. Since I've done that episode, with the experience and the research I've done, I would like to revise that from plausible to most likely.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, for me, like I said, I'm a firm believer in most of this stuff. There's too many things that are not explainable. And, the chat brought it up earlier, and we've touched on it here. I do find it interesting that, you know, there's still a vast majority of our planet that we haven't explored because of the pressure differences when you go too deep into the water. So I'm still curious to see what we're going to find down there one of these days when we can finally get down there. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and you know, even with the heat technology we have, a Bigfoot on a FLIR can look human. So we write it off as human because that's what our brains do.
Talking
about that, I mean, just again, getting back to just how vast the world is. It's one time I was backcountry camping with some friends of mine, and we were hiking along the John Muir Trail, and we didn't notice, and you could see the trail pretty well. We didn't notice someone in a bright yellow rain slicker until they were almost on top of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you're taking in everything, you sometimes miss detail like that. And you can walk right by and not even see it. You know, and again, like in the desert, too. You know, to Crow's point, you know, yeah, no, you're right. In your situations, that probably wouldn't work. But if you are a desert rat, you go hang out in the desert, invest in a black light, and you'd be amazed at how much life you see around you that usually you have to shake out of your boots.
That's kind of, no thanks. All right, guys. So,
but I mean, yeah, it's a big world, and we're just tiny parts of it.
Anyway, exactly.
I love you guys, but if I don't go soon, I'm gonna have to clean up a puddle in my studio.
Mine was the power nap I took before the show.
Well, at this point, I've done pretty much 2 hours and 16 minutes with no break, so I got to go. Literally,
that's right. We didn't take a break tonight.
All right, guys. Thank you for joining us, Jeff. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
That was awesome. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And we are going to get out of here. I will be back Monday morning, and Ordy will be back Monday evening, I think. Jeff, what do you got going on this weekend?
Monday night, Cyber Chill. Saturday and Sunday at 8 p.m., I do D&D in space.
And then Monday morning, hour two, Gene Berardelli is going to be with us. He's written a book, so you're going to get to find out about that. So make sure you tune in for the Daily Dose. On that note, we are out of here. Politics Free Friday is officially done, but don't fret because I'm going to bed. Bye, guys.